Tuesday, January 12th. The Japanese state visit. Robin came upstairs just a little bit before 11. I wore my new navy dress and fur coat and fur hat. Perhaps it would be Robin's last state visit. We'll miss them sorely. The hands were along on apprenticeship. It was bright and beautiful. The flags were flapping in the breeze, and the colorful line of servicemen stiffly at attention. When the Prime Minister, Isako Sato, emerged from the limousine, his first words were English and not bad. He has a good smile, an easy manner, a stocky build. First, their national anthem, slow and impressive and rather like a dirge. Then ours, and I think all of us stand a little taller when it starts up. I don't think I ever saw Lyndon looking handsomer. Ruth and I, both anxious mother hens, persuaded him to put on his overcoat, a new dark blue, beautifully tailored, and his profile looked very stern and strong and solemn. I was proud. His words of welcome, and then the Prime Minister's response, and that was in Japanese and then was translated. And in a very brief moment, it was all over. We went inside and lined up to receive his party, including, of course, our own Ambassador Reischauer, with his wife, who is Japanese, whose English would not for a moment betray it, though her looks do. In the middle of the afternoon, I went exploring through the third floor storerooms with Helen, trying to make an inventory, a beginning at an inventory, of the things that we brought from the Elms and stored here and have since accumulated, partly to keep track of my possessions, partly to know what might be useful, either for utility purposes at the ranch, or for our little museum project, Sam Johnson House at Johnson City, our Lyndon's birthplace. And then to the beauty parlor with a straw bag full of things to read, the guest list, so I could fix in my mind word of greeting to all those that I knew or knew about. I'd already read my briefing on the Prime Minister and the political situation, and a sheaf of information on Stuart Udall's approach to the beautification of the nation project. I had decided to be daring tonight and have my hair put up off my neck and high, as I used to wear it on special occasions 20 years or so ago, only this time with a postiche on top, and to wear something that is so old it is new, a bright red satin with a big bow in front that I call my Mardi Gras dress, because the best time I remember in it was the New Orleans State Society Mardi Gras some 5 or 6 or more years ago, well before the Kennedy days. Lyndon had had a good visit with the Prime Minister, and I gathered they had hit it off well. I thought he had a look of satisfaction. Everything clicked perfectly, and we emerged onto the portico with the glaring lights and the clicking cameras just as the limousine rolled up, and the Prime Minister emerged with Robin and Angie close at hand, and their understudies, the hands in the background learning. We took the Prime Minister up to the Yellow Room, along with his foreign minister, the Rusts, the Hubert Humphreys, the Dillons and Udalls, Japan's very attractive ambassador and his wife, the Takeuchis, the Reischauers, and the Dukes. We had a very amusing gift for the Prime Minister, a red, white, and blue mailbox, vintage 1890, from some small town in the United States, a memento because the Prime Minister was Postmaster General of Japan and long time in the Postal Service. And then the usual things of desk box and pictures and books. And he, the Prime Minister, gave me the most beautiful string of Japanese pearls and a smaller string for Linda and Lucy, and to Lyndon, a cigarette box fashioned from a piece of Oregon pine, which Commodore Perry took to Japan when he visited those shores in 1854. What an item for our library. Then the presentation of the colors, a solemn moment I always savor. And down the stair steps to the tune of Hail to the Chief, Lyndon with the Prime Minister, I with their Foreign Secretary, and the picture taking at the foot of the stairs, and then on to meet the guests, some 150 of them. From the cabinet, besides the Rush, the Dillons, and the Udalls, and the Udalls have their conversation all cut out for the evening, they can climb Fuji. There was a new Secretary of Commerce, John Connor, and his lovely wife. And from the Senate, Paul Douglas, looking a little older, and Emily, the Frank Carlton, the Lee Metcalfs, the Jack Millers, who used to sit right by me as Secretary of the Senate Ladies, and the Danny Inouyes. How nice that that attractive, able man could be sitting in the Senate of the United States to greet the Japanese. And from the House, Tiger and Freddie Teague, the Ralph Rivers, the Robert Staffords, and two of Japanese descent, Spark Matsunaga and lovely little Patsy Mink, the new woman member, both from the last state, Hawaii. Labor was well represented by Joseph Byrne, George Harrison of the Railway Clerks, James G. Patton of the National Farmers Union, and the old Heffy himself, George Meany, on his cane, and business by the Bernard Gimbels of Saks Fifth Avenue and Gimbels, Ron Tripp of Pan American World Airways, the Rudolph Petersons of the Bank of America, and many more, though quite a few from the world of the arts. Fittingly enough, Dr. and Mrs. John Pope of the Freer Gallery of Art, that wonderful collection of Eastern art. When I danced with him, he told me the intriguing story of how this first art collection to be given to the United States government was compiled by a bachelor who quite by chance fell in love with Eastern art. And a Mr. and Mrs. Ashwin Lipp, research curator of the Department of Far Eastern Art in the Metropolitan Museum of New York City. I later found out that he is a prince when he isn't called Mr. Lippy, brother of Bernhard of the Netherlands. Alfred Hitchcock of the entertainment world was the star of the evening. Absolutely everybody recognized him, went up to him and talked to him, and the Japanese loved his little signature drawing of himself made with some three or four lines. And Sarah Vaughan, the blues singer, who was to entertain us later. From Texas, there were the dear Dolph Briscoes from Uvalde. Grass was our subject when we danced. The George Connors of Houston, and the young, attractive John Hills of Houston. In memories of the campaign, my friends the Raymond Firestones of Akron, Ohio, who provided instant crowd when I visited Akron, and the trip looked like it was about to be a flop, and the William Feldsteins of Milwaukee, our longtime supporters and host to Lucy on one of her campaign trips there. And the John Logan, she, Polly Guggenheim, resplendent in jewels, longtime Republican, but very friendly to us in this last campaign, and a hostess for a large Democratic gathering of young people, which Linda and Lucy attended. From politics, there was Jerome Kavanaugh, the mayor of Detroit. I'm really getting to know the mayors of these large cities. And the Governor and Mrs. Dan Moore of North Carolina, how well I remember her speeches on the end of that campaign train. And I think they had a great effect, too. Among old friends, there was nobody I was happier to see than Bob Anderson, now of Greenwich, Connecticut, used to be from Texas, Republican, staunch friend, always helper, and his wife, Ollie. And our good friend, Okamoto, who takes the best pictures, the most dramatic photographer I know. How nice to have him here with the Japanese. But he was only one of many talented Japanese present. Their names are impossible for me, but each of them had succeeded. Yamasaki as an architect, others as businessmen, all with unpronounceable names, Sakai Yonemura, Watanabe, Junpei Kato. It seems to be an old custom of the State Department, and one certainly followed by us, to gather up the nationals from the country that is the guest of honor. Easy to do in this country, made of so many blood strains. It takes rather a long time for them to file past, because I like to have a word to say to each of the 150. It may be the only time I'll see them all evening. So then we filed into the dining room, I taking the arm of the Prime Minister. There were some 20 or so at the head table, the rest of them seated at tables of 10, using the Roosevelt and Truman china, the Vermeer flatware, and the usual lovely arrangements of flowers. I hope the Japanese looked at them with the appreciation they deserve, flower arranging being their specialty. Then the real business of the evening for me, to see whether I could really talk to the head man. I found him rather interesting to talk to. I said something about, I think this generation that we're living in is one of the most exciting generations that ever happened in the history of man. And he said, yes. Says, I think of today as not as the day after yesterday, but as the day before tomorrow. nice poetic phrase could mean a lot. Mm-hmm. I told him about having come across two young Japanese students in the Lincoln Room just a few days before, with Linda Bird, my daughter, who was the hostess escorting them through the White House. They had won a trip to this country because they had been selected as the two most physically fit young people in Japan, a boy and a girl of about 16. He said, yes, do you know, this generation is growing taller, markedly taller, a couple of inches or so, more than the past generation. I said, what do you attribute that to, better nutrition? And he said, yes, in part, but different housing. They don't sit on the floor so much anymore. They frequently sit in chairs. That gives them a chance to stretch their legs. What a varied world. He said, we noticed when we had the Olympics that our athletes were smaller than the athletes from many other countries. I think by the time the Olympics meet again, this coming generation will just about have closed the gap. And then down the road, the gap will be closed. One thing he says was that he hoped that he could increase the taste of the American people for tuna fish, that being one of the biggest exports of his country. I looked over my shoulder at Darf Briscoe, great cattle producer, and said, oh, Mr. Prime Minister, that's going to be hard to sell to the American people. During the dinner, there was one bit of play that I didn't find so amusing. Lyndon kept on looking up, saying something to a butler, who would then disappear and presently return with a 10-gallon Texas hat, which Lyndon would carefully crimp in the style so important to Texas ranchers of the Central Texas area, and then present first to the Prime Minister, which didn't fit. Back it went to get another hat, which did fit, and then a third hat for the Foreign Minister, all of which elicited little peals of laughter around the room. I found it a very odd bit of dinner play, and it wasn't until later that I found out what it was all about. Next, we had the toast. I like Lyndon's very much. He spoke of both of our peoples, the Japanese and the people of the United States, as inventive and creative, and he added, I hope that we may mutually profit from those traits as we work closely together to make the world a better place through technology, a more beautiful place through the arts, and a more rational place through the quest for truth by unfettered minds. The Prime Minister's toast included a reference to the fact that though there were some frictions, which were always more publicized than the areas of agreement, the area in which our interests are not at variance is infinitely greater than the area in which they diverge. And then he got in a bit of ad-libbing fun. He said he hoped that someday President Johnson would give him a 10-gallon Texas hat. Evidently, Lyndon had had a preview of his toast. So much for the hat incidents. Coffee and liqueurs in the Red Room, where I did a bit of pointing out of pictures with the Prime Minister and various guests, and then into the East Room, where I gave a very brief introduction of Sarah Vaughan, a singer's singer, who also enjoys great popularity among millions of her fellow Americans who just delight in listening to her sing. Her repertoire varied from Sakura, a Japanese folk song about O come to see the lovely cherry blossoms, through blues love songs, to end with the spiritual I Feel Like a Motherless Child, the one I like best of all. And then, at a very respectable but fairly early time, about 25 of 12, the Prime Minister made his adieus, but nearly everybody else lingered to dance in the rotunda to the music of the Marine Band. I always love it, and I could barely get around the floor with the same person. But it is the best chance to mix up people and to have a snatch of conversation with a great variety of people, so that you'll really say when you go home that you did more than say, how do you do, to the people who live in the White House. Although, alas, Linda and Lucy, two of those people, couldn't join us tonight. Lyndon went upstairs about 12:45, and I followed within a few minutes with that contented feeling any female has when she can say that her party has been a success. And much more important, I gathered that Lyndon's conversations with the Prime Minister had been well handled and gave him satisfaction.